9 o'clock, we'll go ahead and call the order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Commissioner Mello?
Here.
Commissioner Lindler?
Here.
Commissioner Veal?
Here.
Chair Powell?
Present.
Commissioner Arhart is absent today.
Name of cows. Approval of minutes. Do them one at a time. We couldn't do the March 20th, 2024 minutes because we didn't have a quorum of individuals who were at that meeting at the last meeting.
You can't approve these.
Correct.
Either, yeah.
And, oh, wait. Yeah?
No, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum today.
But you just can't.
I can't. I've got to, because I wasn't here.
Right.
So, are there any additions, modifications, or corrections to the March 20 minutes? I would entertain a vote to approve them then.
So move.
Commissioner right. Mello?
Second.
Commissioner Veal seconds. Any further discussion? Sure. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same. And let the record show Commissioner Fowl abstained since I was not here. Minutes for the April 17th meeting. Modifications, additions, amendments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Also move.
Commissioner Veal moves.
Second.
Mello seconds. Further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same. Record show it was unanimous. Any unscheduled appearances? Seeing none. Conflicts of interest? Seeing none. The order, description of presentation of documents, the availability of public records, and the protocol are in the agenda. Since we only have one item, new business, general plan update, I am not going to be reading verbatim the rest of the protocol, nor the appeal statement, since it is simply an informational new business item. Are we okay with that, Counselor?
Absolutely. Good.
Now, new business. Number two, agenda item number one, presentation of the existing conditions, background report for the Siskiyou County 2050 general plan update. Rachel, are you running the show or is Haley?
Haley.
Miss Lang, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Commission. Haley Lang, Planning Director. I'm just going to kick off this item before the consultant team does their presentation. So the purpose of this item today is to present you all with the public review of the general plan existing conditions background report. Additionally, we will also discuss where we're at in the process and where we're going in certain timelines and deliverables for the future. So with that, I will transfer the presentation over to Brett and Ryan from the consultant team in Tim Carnish.
There'll be no action taken.
Correct. Just simply, opening it up for discussion.
Okay.
Yep.
Are we able to make suggestions?
Sure. Yep. Of course. Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
She's
not
working. They don't
not work.
Work.
I'll talk
about you don't. You're lying. Just for give me your. Can you just give me your full name for the record?
Sure. Full name's Brent. Last name's Gibbons.
Thank you.
Of course. So good morning, Commission Chair, other planning commissioners. Great to be back. We're here to provide an update on the general plan process, where we've been, where we're heading, and then what to anticipate next. Not only for the public to get a better understanding of the process and their expectations moving forward, but also for the Planning Commission so what you can anticipate moving forward and then eventually up to the board. So what we'll do first is we'll just walk through the meeting purpose for this morning. As mentioned, there's no action as part of this meeting. It's just an informational meeting. They'll provide some background information But we will open it up for discussion and further comments on the background report, which Ryan will present shortly. And then we can work with county staff to take those comments back and make modifications as necessary. Next slide. So we'll walk through the general plan update process, then we'll focus on the existing conditions background report. Ryan will walk through each of the different chapters and explain just a little bit about what each chapter covers and what's included and what has gone out currently for public review, and then the timeline for public review. We'll touch on the vision and guiding principles. That's one of our big next steps. And then we'll talk about some meeting deadlines coming up. So as a planning commission, you can let your constituents know of important meetings that they should be a part of. That is some of the key engagement touch points through this process. Next slide. So where have we been? So we've kicked off this project with the county. That included a multi-day county tour. Some of you were able to join us on that tour. As part of that process, it's getting the lay of the land. So before you can start a project of this scale and this size, you need to have an understanding of the jurisdiction you're working with. And that cannot be done behind a screen. You need to be on the ground in the communities, learning some of the unique ins and outs of the county that don't necessarily show up on paper. So that was a pivotal part of this project to get it started. And that kicked off our evaluation phase of the project, which lends into the background report, which is out for public review and we'll touch on today. As part of that process, we initiated a project website that is live, that is the Siskiyou 2050 General Plan website. That is the hub for the entire project. So any deliverable that comes out, any meeting notification is posted there. If you're not able to attend a workshop as a member of the public or the commission or the board, there's always summaries, and sometimes the workshops are actually digital as well. If you're not able to attend, you can attend virtually from that point. As part of this website as well, there's a whole branding scheme. This logo should become familiar, and that's the intent. So when you see this logo, you know it is the general plan. All of our notifications, e-blasts, flyers, anything with social media has this logo on there. The logo will get carried through the project and highlights what the county is embarking on as part of the update. We've also prepared project status memos with county staff. Staff has reported back to the commission and the board on a regular basis, and that was requested by both bodies to have those ongoing discussions for transparency purposes, so you know what to expect coming forward, and I would anticipate those types of touch points to continue throughout the process. We also facilitated a joint study session with the board and the planning commission. That was the last time I was up here speaking to all of you. That was more of an initiation in the beginning of the project. At the same time, we're also facilitating a separate group of TAC meetings. So TAC meetings, that's a technical advisory committee. And the important thing about a TAC is it is based on the composition of department heads for the county. Think of the TAC as a reality check. So before documents go public, we run documents by the TAC, which are your department heads, so that they get a look at the document to make sure that they're comfortable with the information that's being presented as it pertains to their specific departments or niches before it goes public. And through that process, there's about 5 or 6 TAC meetings throughout the general plan that we'll provide documents to. There's been 2 thus far. We take their feedback, that's routed to the planning department, and then we work with the planning department to determine which of those modifications and edits are put through before documents go public. So, we've done the initial evaluation at the front end, and then we prepare the background report. Right now, we prepared an administrative draft, worked with county staff to put forth a public review draft, which Ryan will go through in greater detail, that is out right now for public review. As part of that, there was a second TAC meeting where the TAC group went through each of the chapters, provided comments and modifications. So the public review draft that's out now, and which is before you, which we'll present, the TAC went through and provided feedback on that. We've been working with county staff to update that report moving forward. After the public review process, we'll incorporate additional feedback that comes from you, the Planning Commission, the board, and then any community members. That'll be put into a final plan. That'll get rolled out. Now, I want to make sure to know that this background report is on the website. It's on the Siskiyou 2050 website. There is a commenting feature on there as well. So I would just let your constituents know that that report is live. We have social e-blasts going out regularly that announce the report, and we'll be taking comments for about the next month. Ryan will have a specific date moving forward. So where are we going? From the background report, we move into the vision. Vision and guiding principles. Now this is, I would say, one of the biggest key components of the general plan update. It's something that should not be necessarily taken lightly. A vision, as you all know, is that common statement, common goal that the jurisdiction is reaching for. It's the expectations looking forward the next 20, 30 years. And as part of that, the general plan's goals, policies, and programs, which are the actions taken by the board, which is almost like a to-do list, which the state monitors as part of the general plan, have to be consistent with the vision that the county sets moving forward. So the visioning process is what we're anticipating to start as part of the next set of workshops in June. That's going to be a key piece that we're going to try to get as much community feedback as possible, because the vision can only go so far as the engagement that we get. So the vision statement, that will probably be wrapped up in the summer. The vision statement will come back to the Planning Commission for review, where we receive all community feedback, all of the expectations community members have. Typically through that process, community members submit their vision statement. It's not uncommon to get 200 or 300 different vision statements and then synthesize those down to 2 or 3 that try to capture the essence of what the communities are wanting. And then that's provided forward to the commission and the board for consideration, and the board eventually adopts that. So expect that to come up next. I had touched on this workshop series. As part of the workshop series, the visioning exercises, that's where we'll start them. And the workshops are slated for this coming June. So they'll be on back-to-back nights. There'll be a series of 6 workshops happening simultaneously throughout the county. And we've worked with county staff to determine locations, which are shown up on the screen. After those workshops are completed, we'll provide a summary which outlines all of the feedback collected that eventually will become come before you, the Planning Commission, and the board. So you can see what the pulse is on the community moving forward, since you, as a Planning Commission, ultimately have the planning authority here, and the general plan is a document that you implement. So it's important that through this process, you're aware of what the community is thinking, so when you're reviewing documents, you can ensure consistency as well through the process. The TAC will meet again, and that's when the vision statement's pulled through. They'll provide additional feedback. There'll be a study session, just like the first time we had with the board and commission. We'll move forward with the adoption of the vision and guiding principles. And lastly, there'll be another notification through a newsletter that will basically announce what the adopted vision is, and then we'll proceed forward with the project from there. But this is the next big key step. This will take place over the next few months. Just gives you an idea what to expect. Next slide. So from there, we move into 2 phases which are going to happen simultaneously. So first is the zoning code, and second is the actual policy document in the general plan. So this is a unique process that Siskiyou County is doing. We're updating both at the same time, which is important because policy drives the regulations. So the zoning is the implementing arm of your general plan. And to make sure they're consistent, it's better to do them all at once so that everything is aligned through. So if a general plan land use designation changes, the zoning needs to reflect it. If there's a policy that has to do with specific uses or programs or procedures, the zoning needs to implement it. So since we're going to be doing that at the same time, I'm just giving you a heads up, there'll be a lot of project deliverables coming forward for the Planning Commission to review moving through the process. I would anticipate that the zoning code and the general plan, so phases 4 and 5, we're really looking at starting in the fall. It'll roll into next year. So it'd be about a 10 month process, at least for this piece. But in order to get here, we had to have the background report, have to have the vision. That's going to eventually guide the future policy in your general plan elements. Next slide. Phase 6, everyone's favorite thing, environmental. So if you're, I know you're all aware of what the California Environmental Quality Act is, CEQA. You have to analyze a project, look at potential impacts that a project could have, and then provide mitigation to lessen the impact if there is. So the environmental impact report process, that happens later on. That's when the public review draft general plan is released. So that'll happen next year. An EIR takes 9 to 12 months. Just depends on how detailed it goes, the types of impacts that arise from the policy document, which we're not sure yet, that's not created. And then the public review process depends how many comments or letters we get in from community members, organizations, surrounding jurisdictions who would like to comment on that document. But we're still a ways out, but just be aware that that is coming down. And then phase seven. It's what we all hope for out of every process, not necessarily planning related, but it's a successful adoption. So the intent is to have all of these meetings, all of these touch points with the community members, with the commission, with the board. So when we get to the end, there are no surprises. You've seen it all. It's all there. And at that point, we hope for a successful adoption. Now, I do want to make this point, and we've heard from community members so far through the process saying, well, when it gets to this phase, can the general plan still be changed? Is there still room for modification? Yes, the general plan is not adopted until it's adopted by the board. So at this point, there can be changes, there can be suggestions, there can be tweaks throughout this entire process up until the final day. So something to consider, and your constituents may consider if they have public comment or public feedback throughout the process. So that wraps up the phases that we're going through, gives you an idea of what we've completed so far and then what to anticipate next. I'm going to have Ryan come up and give an overview of the background report, talk a little bit about the next steps, just touch on a little bit what I've already gone through, and then we'll hand it back to the chair for any questions you may have on process of the report. Thanks.
Thank you for having me today. My name is Ryan Lester, if you need my full name.
Thank you.
So now that we've gone through a kind of overall project status update, I wanted to give a status update of the background report. So we just published a background report. The background report has two main purposes. First, it's to set up kind of the context, to look at the data that's out there on the county, and to set up the context for where we're planning. Right? So you can't really put goals, policies, and programs in place unless you really understand what's the population like, what are the land uses like, what are the resources in the community. So the background report really goes through a number of topic areas that are required as part of the EIR to look at all of those data points and to begin to analyze them. Kind of gives like a common ground for everybody as we're going through the general plan process. The other purpose of it is to inform the environmental impact report. So the background report actually gets incorporated into the EIR as the existing environmental setting. So the topics that we cover in the background report are really specific because most of them are required as part of doing the larger EIR on the general plan. So those are the two main purposes of the background report. We just published it this week, so I don't expect you to have gone through it or the public to have gone through it yet, but I did want to kind of go through each of the chapters just to say what's included, give like a high-level overview. But I'll let you know we are currently putting together a newsletter that goes into some of the key findings from each section and makes that available to the public in a really readable way. We want people to understand what's in there before they open it up and not to just be a complete blank slate. So I'll give a little context to what each of the chapters are and let folks know that the newsletter's coming out probably early next week. We also, just so you know, we extended the public review period. So the public review period actually goes past the upcoming workshops so that if anybody hasn't heard about this and they show up to the workshop and they're like, wait, you have a background report I want to comment on, they have like 2 weeks extra. So we just wanted to build that in. So the first substantive chapter.
For the purpose of today, I'm going to stop you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just for a second. Would you prefer as you're going through each of these sections, if we have questions, to ask you when we have the question, or do you want us to bombard you at the conclusion, all the way back to something that you just covered?
I think you can feel free to stop me if you want to talk about
land use. I just wanted to ask that for the commissioners because several of us have questions as this goes through.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fire away then.
And we're happy to try to answer your questions.
Okay.
That's great. I will say that our firm wrote some of these sections, but we also had specialists write other sections.
Okay.
So especially with cultural resources, biological resources, things like that.
Okay.
you know, so we'll do our best to answer your questions today. Any we can, we can take back to our sub-consultants, get you an answer, and respond.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first substantive chapter is land use. So in the land use section, we really want to look at what are the existing uses in the county. You know, we look at assessor parcel data and what's reported as the existing use by tax data on that site, because as we know, the existing uses don't always match up with what's in your existing general plan or your zoning. There are non-conforming uses, things like that. So we want to look at the existing uses, the existing zoning, what's the existing zoning out there, what have we planned for in the past, as well as the existing general plan designations. What have we planned for in the past? That really feeds into, you know, looking at those maps and what do we want for the future. Okay,
so I'm going to stop you right there.
Sure.
There's my first question.
Absolutely.
I did not see in this first run of the background report a number that reflects how many either acres or parcels are currently existing as our infamous term, pre-existing non-conforming use.
Okay.
Do we have access for that number, Rachel, Haley, Rick? Because we see a number of projects over the course of my life here, numbering probably 25 to 30 now, where we get the project and one of the first statements by Rachel or Bernadette is, this is a pre-existing non-conforming use. Do we have access? Can we get that to include in here to begin that cleanup? Because I know Blair and I have constantly, how can we identify this?
So I just want to, from our perspective, the reason they are non-conforming is because they're doing it without our permission a lot of the times. And when we find out about them and we try to bring them into conformance, that's when you see them. So for us to get a number now, we don't have that, because we would have to analyze every single property, what the use is, see if what they're actually doing on the property is a legitimate use that they have permits for or not. So no, we do not have that as far as I can come up with.
Okay, so you're breaking this, you're delineating a little bit, and I completely understand what you're saying. I know we have parcels that are grandfathered in from, they're allowed to continue what they are doing because they were doing it pre last general plan update.
Correct.
Now we're going to have this general plan update and they are still going to be grandfathered.
Mm-hmm.
How many other parcels now with this new update are we going to have that are going to now add to that pre-existing non-conforming use? And I'm not saying, I'm not looking at the parcels that are doing something they shouldn't be doing because they aren't grandfathered. I'm talking about those that were grandfathered in before the last general plan was adopted, and now we're going to have another general plan adoption that will likely add more parcels to that non-conforming pre-existing.
So I would have to say that if they are a non-conforming use that predated our old general plan and they still are an existing use, we may want to take a look at those parcels and see if maybe they need to have a zoning change so that their pre-existing use is now conforming.
That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
I'm asking.
Yeah, so I don't know of an avenue for us to identify them other than the assessors do under their land use. A lot of times they'll say non-conforming. However, I have found that actually the land use designations that the assessors use when it says non-conforming is often inaccurate. So I don't know that there's an accurate way to determine that other than going area by area and taking a look one by one at the uses that are on the property compared to the zoning and see if there are some that we may want to identify as needing to be corrected, because Like, for example, over on Fair Lane, there's a business there that they would probably be more likely to be appropriately in the light industrial district, but they're considered commercial. So, you know, there's a few that we've run across that were like, ooh, why are they that when they should be this? But it would take just looking at the individual parcels in an area and then kind of trying to identify the ones that perhaps need some changing.
Is there a way to stratify that? And I don't know if we're talking hundreds of non-conforming or thousands. I don't know. But is there a way to at least take, you know, to get the largest land area and just stratify it with, you know, anybody over 20 acres, anybody over 40 acres, and at least we're capturing most of the land mass to get it back into conformance?
Well, and something just to think about too, we might want to take a look at the, what is it, Article 25, the non-conforming use section, and look at those definitions, because it's very much open to interpretation, right? So if it's the intent of the commission to have like the least amount of carryover, right, like fully bonafide, you know, businesses that are working in compliance move over and maybe have, you know, lesser of that move over, we might want to redefine what we're considering non-conforming, right? So that can look really different too for us in the future.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think my general thought is if we're going through this exercise of having a general plan for the vision of, you know, what our land base is being used for, we should have a, and maybe I'm making a naive statement here, not knowing all the facts, but it seems like we would have want to have some general conformance with that starting point.
And I will say, I won't speak for Commissioner Hart, but I know he and I have both brought this up. I'll speak for myself. I do not want to put a landowner in a position where perhaps it's been 3-4 generations in the family on a parcel and it predates the last general plan. They have been doing the same activity on the land for 80 plus years. We now are adopting a new general plan. They are labeled as a pre-existing non-conforming use. They are wanting to sell the property to a new owner, and all of a sudden are burdened with additional hurdles to overcome to bring a parcel or parcels into conformance before they can make the transaction in sale. I do not want to see that.
Yeah.
And that's why I personally am concerned with this, to identify what are those, and as you said, Haley, maybe we'd look at the definitions,
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to see somebody who is getting stopped selling land to individual B until A, B, C, D, E, and F are achieved. Now you can go ahead and make that transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to my last question on this topic. Is the assessor or someone from the assessor's office included in this TAC to where we can bring them in and have them be a partner in this to maybe save time here for our staff? Because I think it would be very informative for them as well to get the county all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Where we don't have tax collector on one page, assessor on one page, and planning on a third page.
Right.
Let's all get on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can bring them in, definitely.
I think that'd be beneficial, especially mm-hmm. here at the ground level while we're looking at this background, trying to get some of this information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done on this topic. Go ahead, Mr. Miller.
The word prescriptive rights. When I was on the Planning Commission in the city of Mount Shasta, we had some issues and prescriptive rights came up, and I think that what it meant then was, when we're talking about pre-existing, if a property changed hands, like access, a road that's been there for 30 years. The property changes hands. So at that time, that road under prescriptive rights had to remain. Is that still the case?
That's civil.
That's, yeah.
That's civil. That's
and there's a lot right. of, okay. there's a lot of context
yep.
on prescriptive easement
okay.
rights on.
I'm talking yeah. 25 years.
Ago. Yeah, there's, that's
still
a,
active today, that's civil.
Okay, now, yeah. number two, this has to do with you. Does the Scott Valley plan remain as it is through this process?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're
thank
not,
you.
We're not
it
plan.
It can't
not
change changing. Unless it's done by the, if there's a
correct.
Process to change that.
And
nothing's happening with that.
Okay, correct. That's fine, thank you.
For all those no listening online, land plan is not part of the modification of the general plan. You may continue, sir.
No problem. So then the other things we want to do with the land use chapter is talk about what existing plans are relevant to the county. So looking at regional plans, looking at where cities have responsibility and the county has responsibility, and just outlining that so that everyone gets on the same page. We also did a disadvantaged unincorporated communities analysis. This is something that's required by state law. We put a short bit about it in the background report, and then we have an appendix that we're finalizing right now that will be released on the website that will go into detail about each of the service areas and any service deficiencies that were identified. Next, please.
Or do you jump? Okay, stop on land use, because she has questions
yeah,
there, and I have questions on land use also.
Okay.
Okay.
So, am I good to go?
No, go for it.
Okay, so just, I don't know if this is like the section to ask questions, but I'm going to take my time and do that. Mm-hmm. So under, on page 13, under regional setting, it says the county is made up of high mountains, peaks, forested areas, and deep river canyons, but it doesn't mention all of our wonderful valleys in that sentence. You know, we've got the Scott Valley, the Shasta Valley, you know, Butte Valley, etc. Those are prominent land features I think should be mentioned in that opening sentence there. Also in the second paragraph under regional settings, it says the county is bordered by the Oregon to the north. It's the, you shouldn't have the Oregon, it's
no,
just
it's
the
just
Oregon.
Technical.
So that needs to, I do technical writing.
Thank you.
So apologies. One other thing on page 14, this is the only map under figure 1.1. It's the only map without a north arrow.
Yes. Okay.
Because I do cartography. I'm kind of a stickler on arrows.
Yep.
Let's see. Let me go to page 23. I think I'm still in land use.
Oh, okay. I'm 15, 16, and 22.
Okay.
I'm glad you guys got into it. This is
oh,
awesome.
No, we read it. Yeah. We read it. We that's what we earn our big bucks for, right? So, no, this is our service to our community. So, okay, so quick question. Under item, it starts off on page 23, and we're talking about the different areas. So it'd be like Lake Chasina, Happy Camp, etc. Lake Chasina, because that's, you know, my district. It says Lake Chasina has some services. And I noticed, you know, there's a listing of services by region. Sometimes we're talking about private businesses. Sometimes we're talking just about, like, public services. So I was hoping, like, on this one on page 23, where it says some services, I would say for Lake Chasina, you know, we should classify instead of the word some.
Okay.
To designate it as public services.
Okay.
Because we don't talk about the private businesses that are there. Like, we do have a gas station. We do have, you know, a little mini market.
But
so I would like.
But it is noted for McDowell.
But it is noted for McDowell. So and that was going to be my second point. Because if we are going to list restaurants and gas stations and churches and parks, then we should be consistent on each.
Awesome.
Otherwise, I think we should only list the public services available.
Okay.
Because businesses come and go, and being that this is a long-term plan, my recommendation is let's just focus on the public. I don't know how the commission, but that was
one
my comment.
Either they have police, fire, sewer, water. Those are your public services, or they don't. Okay. If you start going into the businesses like McDowell,
yeah,
has a gas station, yes, but that's not a public service, that's private.
That's my point.
Right. Okay, absolutely.
That was my point.
So either do an all or limit it to the public.
Sure.
I've got one that, I think you've misidentified the airport. You've got the airport that has the most activity, the Siskiyou County Airport, and the one that has the most activity is the Montague Airport.
Okay, I'll look into that. Thank you.
I think the one, the Siskiyou County Airport, I don't think it's in, is that right? Am I right?
They have different service, basically, right? The larger
but the most activity, most activity is Montague.
Jets and so forth, small planes in Montague. Yeah, as far as actual flights off the ground.
I think the 40, I think 40 takeoffs and landings, it's Montague Airport, right?
Yeah, I don't have
it. I think it's darn near more than that, especially during fire season.
Yeah, I would look into it. It's no big deal, but the Royal Field is the Montague Airport. I think that's the one that's most used.
Mm. Okay. Okay, great. We'll look into the numbers.
And then along with this, and this is just writing styles, but I believe it was under the Happy Camp one. I can't find exactly what page, but it was like a gas station, a restaurant, a just some of the writing style seems a little rude. I would like to see some of that cleaned up. On page 39, where it talks about timber as being a land classification, existing land use, and then you describe it. It shows timber as just being 588,000 acres. Bless you. We have significantly more. So I would classify that as maybe it's, and maybe this is a question for you. Are you saying that 588,000 acres is just land zoned as TPZ?
So I'm not looking at it right now, but I think that's under existing land use. So mm-hmm. that would be based off of the assessor's data, what they say is happening on
so
the land.
I'm assuming that's a land the tax definition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because as a land base, we have significantly more than 588,000 acres. A little bit about my background is I am a registered professional forester. I'm on the state planning pest control. I'm the chair of actually the state pest control committee, et cetera, et cetera. So I know Siskiyou County has more than 588,000 acres. So I would clean that up. And then also, I assume under the ag and livestock acres, which was almost the same, was that looking at just those as ag one, ag two acres?
Yep.
Okay. So that would add one. So with that, I would say that the timber is looking at maybe just TPZ.
Yes. Yep, it's the land use.
Okay. Because that would not take into account any of our federal land. Now, while this is and maybe this is my correction or maybe something we want to mention, is we're only looking at private land, not the federal land piece? Or is this a description of the county as a whole? Because I think that context might be missing if it is just the 588.
Yeah, I think we need to explain that better because if it's the existing land use section, it's based off the tax rolls.
Yes.
The federal land, I don't think, would be included in that.
So federal land wouldn't be counted. It would just be private land.
Okay.
But I think that what we can do here is provide a bit more information and in its description, even a disclaimer that notes that there is more land beyond this. This is just focusing on tax roll. It does not include blank, blank, and blank.
Perfect.
We can expand on that.
Perfect. Because that, and that's what threw me off is that opening sentence says, you know, currently 588,000 acres of land in Siskiyou County are classified as timber. And immediately I read that. I'm like, no, we got more than that.
Sure.
So if you can expand on that.
Sure. And what I'd recommend is that we don't actually modify those numbers because that is reported data from the assessor. So if we modify those numbers, they become invalid.
Yeah.
So if we put a disclaimer in, I think that'll cover it.
That'll work. And that way we're explaining further where you're getting that data.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. While we're still in that, and then I'll get to you,
thank
Mr.
You.
Mello. This is one that I had noted also. This is a general plan for the county, which is essentially guiding the future development, utilization, management of the land in Siskiyou County. We're on timber, and most of us in here are familiar with the potential realized revenue that comes back to our communities with timber sales. There is, and I've been in discussions, I'm sure Danielle is familiar with this as well, with state CAL FIRE and federal Forest Service, and discussions currently taking place with, they're labeling it as fuel load reduction, fire resilience, numerous other ideas of pulling timber that's dead, dying, burned, and some that is living to thin. There are going to be sales happening, which, if we're going to be honest about the future of Siskiyou County, could present opportunity for revenue, which, whether we like it or not, general plans are about making money. People, county, state, who be you. I think we need to, and this is maybe more on the miscellaneous. Miscellaneous is listed at darn near 62% of the county. I get that. It's not owned privately, it's public.
Yes.
If we're going to have a percentage that's over 50% called miscellaneous, I have a problem with that. That needs to be broken down.
Okay.
What percent is federal? What percent is incorporated? And let's get that number so it's manageable. Because if our county supervisors want real numbers where they can go to the Fed or the state and say, we have X number of acres that need fire resilience done. They need to have salvage done. We need those numbers in the general plan, in a document, so when we go to whatever agency it is, here's the number, and it was just codified.
Okay, sure.
That's number one. Number two, Danielle, correct me if I'm wrong, there are still some portions of federal land that border private land that are accessible through partnerships which date back to the early 1940s and 30s, where private companies, timber companies, who border public lands have the availability for a percent of harvest, but that got knocked in the head back in the listing of the spotted owl in 92. And so there was a kink put in the cog of progress. But there are rumors, albeit rumors, that those percentages may be opened back up in the next 5 to 10 years. Essentially, it's the sphere of influence that public via private have, where some of those lands may be opened back up for harvesting and thinning again. And so we need to make sure, I get the assessor gave you these numbers, and I understand, yeah, these are probably just TPZ, but we need to recognize and delineate and identify how many acres are in that area, which are accessible to the county, because then ultimately, whether it be private timber, the county, we have managerial responsibility on those acres.
Yeah. And I do know, I'm not familiar with any currently, at least, let's just say, operational percentage use agreements on federal timberlands currently being operated on.
I had one.
But I will say there are, and we're involved with, several cooperative road use agreements with the Forest Service where we jointly maintain roads. You know, like I was supposed to be out at Shackelford Road, you know, this week looking at, you know, allowing access through our managed lands to the trailheads and things like that that, you know, the public uses. So there is that collaboration still with federal agencies.
And I think, and it's important, and I bring this up not solely for the financial potential, but we're screwed in California when it comes to insurance. I just accept that. Yeah. But we're entering in discussions now when it comes to fire insurance, particularly catastrophic, and you're dealing with a state insurance commissioner and you're dealing with private insurance companies. The discussion is now being had rather than simply looking at zip codes for assessing potential catastrophic wildfire risk. We are getting an actual body from an entity on the ground to look at the surrounding area and designate, are you high risk, medium, or low risk?
I was actually going to talk about that at public comment because there's okay. a third party certification coming.
Correct. And so that's why, in my mind, I'm looking at this periphery of the junction of private public land being important to be noted in here, because I feel that our county supervisors can utilize that in bargaining with the state and insurance companies to help make insurance affordable again, particularly for communities Happy Camp, Soames, Cecil, Sawyers, Callahan, Aetna, really even Fort Jones.
Even Little Shasta.
I'm looking in my area on the west side. We've got to find a solution there, or people can't get insurance. And if you can't get insurance, you can't get a loan. You can't get a loan, you can't buy or sell.
Or if you lose insurance, your loan is due and payable.
And so that's why those numbers, to me, are important for my constituents.
Yeah.
Okay. And that the periphery data, we'll have to coordinate with county staff on how to properly locate and identify that. That's not necessarily like necessarily available information like we have on hand currently.
Right.
So we can work with the staff over the next few weeks to try to pull that together and add some additional language, potentially a map. But I can't make any promise in that because we got to find what data we have. It might not be regular GIS data we can pull from, and it might need to take further evaluation. We can work on that.
And add a disclaimer or a footnote. Sure. We're looking at this in the general plan. These acres, however, X number of feet, X number of miles, is right. going to be classified as this, but then break down that miscellaneous.
And the miscellaneous, that comes from the tax assessor too. So that's going to have to be a discussion with the tax assessor on if they have the breakdown.
Taxes, assessor, once again, needs to be part of this.
They'll need to provide the percentage breakdown of what that miscellaneous category is. If they don't break it down, then that'll be a different discussion on how that is summarized in the report.
Yep.
Okay. We might be able to overlay the maps and look at, okay, this is obviously federal land, this is obviously state land.
Okay. I'll come back to you. I told Commissioner Mello I'd go to him. I'll come back to you, and then I have another question on the land. Mr. Dean.
Just for clarification, the commission here, right? So breaking down the miscellaneous piece of it. So one huge part would be wilderness, right? Break out the wilderness, break out the public access to the federal lands. And that, that'll be a big start.
Okay. Yeah. And even delineate the difference between BLM, wilderness, Forest Service.
Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously, and if you need, if our county doesn't have that, obviously the SO offices for the Shasta T or the Klamath have all that data for their forests with them.
Oh, okay.
And if you need contacts, you get in touch with me on anything forestry related.
I'm sure we will.
Willing to help. Yes.
Through the chair. The assessor, just so you guys do know, under the miscellaneous category, they do have it delineated, whether it's state or federal, or even Bureau of Indian Affairs, they do have different categories. But they do have it broken as a together group of miscellaneous that doesn't count as any particular thing. Additionally, I wanted to comment on the census designated place comment that you made. So you mentioned Shastina had a gas station and a mini mart and stuff like that. I want to make sure you're aware that it's only the census designated place which has defined borders. The mini mart and the gas station are outside.
Right of outside that line.
Yeah. So for example, I think it was Gazelle. It didn't have an elementary school listed. And I was like, it has an elementary school, but it's outside of the boundaries. So,
in Gazelle?
I'm going to come back to that one because you're hitting on my next question, but I promised Commissioner Mello the floor, but keep that thought because now I have a question. That's
Sounds
my next
good.
Question.
Yeah, because how did those boundaries get?
66% of the land in this county is federal land or thereabouts, plus or minus. When it used to be logged, the county got some revenue, schools got revenue. Is that the case anymore?
Mm-hmm.
So who gets the money?
But it's not the federal land. There's no harvesting on federal land.
Yeah, it's through.
Well, I know, but somebody's got to pay for the law.
So it's a PILT payment. So we used to get.
It doesn't matter.
We used to get a payment in lieu of taxes.
Yes.
For the harvest. Now they have taken that and, you know, through like Secure Rural Schools and others, they are just giving us an amount of money outside of taxes because they don't harvest enough money to generate enough revenue to support the land base of which they own within specific counties. So the Congress just allocates a certain dollar amount and then it's broken down by the timbered counties that used to get these PILT payments.
Okay.
And that is a constant source of discussion at the federal level. I know our superintendent of schools, it was Kermit Walters, is heavily involved with those discussions, but those are federal questions that we are constantly...
Take forever to get answered.
And that's where that periphery, that boundary, where the merge is, where it goes public to private, is back on the table for discussion because there is some headway on being able to get in and thin and harvest.
Well, that's right. If they want to thin and harvest, who's going to get the money? Is there going to be any money?
Well, so
depends if there's a market.
We're kind of getting off on a little bit of a topic here.
That's okay.
But this
is all part of it with me.
It is. I can give you, if you don't mind, I can give them a little bit of
a brief one.
So the money goes...
He has the floor.
Yep. So the money currently goes to the federal entity or the timber purchaser, depending on how the contract is set up. So, but to think that there's a lot of money in timber harvest anymore is a misnomer. Trees are actually... especially with, depends on the size of the trees, et cetera, but the average, you know, harvesting of trees is $400 a thousand by the time you get it to the mill. You're lucky to get pine sold at $325 a thousand. So there isn't money unless you're logging redwood, which is a whole different economy of scale.
That's a whole different thing.
Or you've got some dug fir or maybe some white fir a year to break even. But to think there's all this money generated,
there's
especially
not.
When you have to do all the permitting, it's break even. And actually the timber economy is really at a crossroads right now. We're on the verge of another collapse.
Good. Timber is like ag. It's costing us more to put up hay than it's
and
worth.
You can get
we're trying to figure out how to lose the least amount of money, not make a profit.
That's forestry.
And that's ag right now also, unless you have cattle. But we all got rid of them because the state took our water, so we don't have any cattle to sell, so we're still screwed. Rachel.
Yes.
Dealing with the census, and maybe this is for you gentlemen also. Two particular maps... where I have the question, and it was on the land use page 15, LU16, dealing with Edgewood and McLeod. I know we don't have control of the boundary that the federal census utilizes. But there's a chunk on Edgewood, the southwest portion, and in McLeod, the eastern border, which has been developed because it came before us recently. How do we include that? Because the McLeod Services District services what's outside that census boundary. Is there any way to bring it into parity?
So every 10 years, the census contacts the various government entities that are responsible for land use, so planning, and we are allowed to make suggestions and to modify block groups and stuff like that. We did do some work. It was our prior GIS person and I, Holly Bond, who now works for Cal Fire, doing GIS for them. But the only boundary that we modified in the previous opportunity, it was the Shastina boundary, and it was to try to include more of what you were just talking about, to include the actual community as part of the census designated place. So since we are kind of, we're messing with the Legos and they're messing with the buildings, it's basically how I would, you know, describe it. We can tell them little boundary changes here and there, and then they say, okay, now all of these block groups are now part of that census designated place. So if you do have places that you've identified that do need further work, then that would be probably around 2028 that we would be starting to get notifications from the Census Bureau letting us know that we need to start doing some modification if we want to. Okay. So that's something that we could do at that point. We can't do anything in the middle part here where we're at.
Okay.
And that's to clarify, so we can't change the boundaries because I'm looking at the one from Lake Shastina. And
it's better than it was the last census.
Okay.
Not much, but it is a little.
Because
I would like, when I think of Lake Shastina, I think of it not just, you know, ending on that road. That's, you know, it goes out to, you know, the golf course.
Well,
Lake Shastina.
I mean,
97.
It comes all the way down here. I would
yeah,
include
all
of
that.
That.
Exactly.
Just like Edgewood, all of First Street is not included. McLeod, that whole new development that we approved on that eastern border is not included.
Mm-hmm. And like a lot of Carrick isn't there. Like
yeah.
This is all Carrick. It just seems like a lot of it's cut off. Edgewood, you know, like I technically live in Edgewood. When I put my address in, half the time it comes up on Edgewood.
It should come.
But it doesn't show it at all on the other side of the freeway. So when we get ready to do those, I would like to look at it. Because the one that triggered me is the school not being in Gazelle, because it's in Gazelle.
Yeah.
Like, it's on the main.
So what we'll do is, once it comes time to review this again, there are limitations on what modifications we can do.
Okay.
So what we can do is we can schedule an item for the Planning Commission to review all the census-designated places and see what modifications we may want to try for, if that sounds okay to you guys.
Yep, sounds great.
All right.
Through the chair, can I continue to ask questions?
Yes, go ahead. I'm caught up with you now.
Okay. So on page 49 of the document,
land use?
It talks, yeah, we're,
yeah,
still,
we're still
in land use. I'm not moving on yet. So it talks about, let me get there. I think it's 49. Can I see your document? Oh, I got that page.
Yes, we don't have the page numbers on the electronic.
Well,
we have the number, the
right
LU25s, but
you
the actual it, page.
You
it's the section where it talks about TPZ. Let's see. I just wanted to clarify.
See, you guys had to come back to the old convention.
I know.
You've technically.
It's on LU27.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Because I've got a note on that one also.
So TPZ, where did you guys get that definition? Because it is not what I'm... 27, you see TPZ? Yeah, so the question I get is, well, I'll let you answer. Where'd you get that definition for TPZ?
It depends on which subsection it's under. If it's under the general plan, then I assume we would have pulled that from the existing general plan.
Okay.
Instead of the zoning section, we would have looked there first.
Okay, so there's one sentence that isn't quite accurate with everything that I've learned and deal with TPZ, you know, the Tax Act. It says the purpose of TPZ district is to provide a zoning consistent with blah, 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 to encourage the production of timber, which is correct, to protect immature trees so that they may eventually be harvested. It's that sentence.
Okay.
It wasn't TPZ at the, you know, which is originally a state level, replaced what was called an ad valorem tax, and it was actually put in effect to protect older trees, because in an ad valorem tax, you were taxed on the value of the standing timber. So as a tree got larger, it was worth more. People were overcutting their land in the 70s, so they got rid of the ad valorem tax to save the larger trees. It wasn't to protect the smaller trees. So I think that sentence should be struck.
Through the chair?
Yeah.
That is actually in Muni code. That's specifically what it says for TPZ zoning.
Muni code through the county?
Yes. So
well,
it says
wrong.
In the very first line, the last half of the first sentence says to encourage the production of timber, to protect immature trees so that they may eventually be harvested, and to provide for the restricting of the uses of timberland to the production of timber products, incompatible uses, which I believe is exactly what you, and it
yeah.
has a little bit more.
Well,
so
I can tell you,
quote.
And that's wrong though. I can tell you, we don't, immature trees, the only thing they do is burn.
Yep.
We don't go after them and target them for harvest. And I don't know how we changed that Muni code, but that was never why TPZ at the state level was put in. It was put in to replace the ad valorem tax.
What's the circumference of immature trees?
Well, typically it's 10 inch minus, 12 inch minus. You know, we're talking stuff like this that's not even going to make a log.
So I think what would be beneficial is if there's specific language that you'd like to see modified, if you can provide that to county staff, because we'll be updating the zoning.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what we could do at this point is we could make that modification here, flag that to get changed in the zoning and the policy document
okay.
to the next phase of the project.
And I can send you supporting documentation on, you know, the history of this.
Sure. Yeah, and
right
I appreciate that.
Okay.
And that's why I mentioned it's this is why it's so important that the zoning and the general plan are going at the same time. Here's a perfect
okay.
example.
Okay. And I do appreciate you clarifying that, Rachel, as to where that came from. We just need to fix that. Okay. Hold one sec. That was page 14. Page 61. I'm sorry, guys. I did read this.
61 on this?
61. No, it's my page 61, which is your page. Okay, you're talking about surrounding county general plans. In Humboldt County, it talks about a boreal forest. Is that term borrowed from their general plan?
Yeah, usually those descriptions, we go looking in their general plan, and usually in the introduction, there's like a nice bit of text that we can grab that really describes
yeah.
what their goals were. So we definitely don't write those and make
yeah,
them.
Yeah, okay.
So
the word that stood out to me and the reason I'm questioning that is we don't really have boreal forests in California, let alone in Humboldt County. Boreal forests are typically subarctic conditions.
Okay.
You know, Humboldt's not really known for subarctic conditions.
Okay.
So that was just a point, question. One sec. Okay. Page 63, which is LU 47. I guess that's probably easier. But digital page 63 under regional plans. Under, and I don't know if this comes from the Scott Valley area plan or not, but the very last sentence says, as of 2023, due to restrictions on mining and timber activities imposed by state and federal law, the economy in Scott Valley has shifted away from resource extraction activities and is now further dominated by agricultural production. I assume, are you including, you know, timber harvest, we don't typically, resource extraction is typically oil mining, you know,
okay.
extraction.
We manage resources.
Yeah,
okay.
Timber's not technically an extraction. Actually, you can go to, like, the Extraction Science Journal, and it just focuses on mining oil and gas.
Okay.
It doesn't relate to forestry, so I just want to make that.
You extract water, you extract oil, you extract coal. Extract gold. That's not being replaced or replenished.
Got it.
Trees, cattle, grass, alfalfa, that regenerates.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't extract it.
Okay.
And then one other question. So, and this is more, so under page, since we're talking about land use planning, LU 49, under the state plans, we list a bunch of plans that deal with what I believe is state land management, but we don't mention like the Zeebrugge-Nejedly Forest Practices Act. That's a huge land management thing on all the timbered acres. As well as Under the local, we do have statewide fire plants or countywide fire plans. I don't know if those need to be mentioned, but those are just questions.
Yeah, those might need to be added to like the safety chapter.
Safety? Okay, like, not
safety
necessarily.
Planning. But that's a great suggestion. We can look into those and where they would fit in best.
Okay, yeah. So I would look into the Zeeburna Deadly Forest Practices Act, because that does dictate all management of timber and conversion of timber to a non-timbered use.
Okay, thank you.
Let me keep going. I apologize for taking long. Yes, please go.
Okay, so I'm looking at agreement in numbers. And perhaps you can answer this question for me. So on land use, page 22 in the table, it has ag at 588,000 acres. But if you go to land use, LU, page 29, agriculture is listed at 1.3 million acres. At that LU 22 page, it has the miscellaneous at 2.5 million acres. But if you jump to LU 29 again, all of a sudden rural residential ag is at 2.1 million acres,
yeah,
which is darn near the entire miscellaneous. But we just heard miscellaneous was BLM, Forest Service, public lands. Numbers don't add up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two tables,
if
you lay them up, they are way off.
Yeah, so this goes back to, again, the discrepancy between assessor parcel land uses and planned land uses, right? So we would want to look into that. As was mentioned, the miscellaneous category has multiple things. All of the assessor's data has a main category and then like a million little codes that fit underneath that. So it's probably not restricted.
But how do we get rural residential at 2.1 million acres, which darn near eats up all of the 2.5 million acres for miscellaneous?
Through the chair.
Yeah.
So zoning in our county classifies state and federal land as rural residential.
Wait a minute. No. Back the horse up here.
Two different things.
You cannot build a house in wildlands.
Two different things, though. It's the land use that we have in zoning classifies federal and state land as rural residential agricultural. And then you have the assessors saying that the land use that's actually occurring is under the classification of miscellaneous, which includes roads, churches, utilities, county, state, federal lands.
Okay,
so
that's got to be cleaned up.
So we're essentially
we're not
comparing
apples and apples.
It's comparing apples to oranges
apples
in this case. In this case, so it's looking at what the assessor views from a taxable use on the ground compared to what the county is designating the land. Now, the fact that rural residential is on federal land through zoning, that can change.
Yeah.
You would create, most typically, would be a public. Or it could even be a federal designation, a federal zoning designation, and the land would get rezoned.
And we have discussed doing exactly that to clean this issue up,
yes,
because
okay,
it's a known issue. Yes.
Right.
So
that's why you're seeing the discrepancies. They're two very different.
Okay, that deals with one discrepancy.
Sure.
But what about the discrepancy with the ag acres?
Or the TPC?
When is there a chunk in this table 2.4 of the 1.3 million that it's considering some timber as ag?
It potentially could, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Yes.
So
and
we
again,
need
the,
to
and
get
the assessor
those
data isn't taking into account the federal land under
mm-hmm.
that ag. So if there is some federal land that's being classified as ag, it's not going to show up there. It'll show up under miscellaneous. So
okay.
Having managed lots of general plans, there's often a lot of confusion between what the tax assessor says, what your zoning says, and what your general plan says. The tables are usually not consistent because they're all analyzing different things.
Okay,
and they all
I'm going to tell you from my perspective.
Sure.
I want this entire document to be one language, which means it needs to get along. I don't want a section mm-hmm. in German, a section in English, and a section in Spanish.
Sure.
Where dialect means different things.
I think from the general plan and the zoning perspective, there's definitely a lot of cleanup for consistency purposes between those. Right now, they don't align. So that across the board will be in English language.
Okay.
To align with the assessor is a completely different thing because there's the tax code, which your general plan's not the tax code that's applied to the parcels. So I can't say for certain that those will be consistent across the board. It's a completely different thing.
So hold on there.
Sure.
I will be so bold as to ask the question, why the hell not? Because taxes come from private land. We do not get taxes, uh-huh. although I think we should be paid by the federal government mm-hmm. for federal lands that they screw up on. But county taxes come from private land. Private land is broken into parcels. Private parcels are governed by the county, by the general plan, by the planning department, by the planning commission. It should all be one language and it should all align. So there's no excuse why it shouldn't. Other than we have different departments that may not be talking the same language, which is why I come back. Mm-hmm. We need to be speaking English, one language, and these need to align.
Through the chair. So I want to make sure to reiterate that this is the background report. It's the existing conditions. The existing condition
is showing how screwed up things are. And I'm impressing that when the final document comes out, this needs to be rectified.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. We agree.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? And that kind of gets to the point where I'm going at. So when this is adopted, right, and it's not the controlling document that we deal with in our planning,
Can I ask for a clarification? The general plan or the background report?
The general plan. When we get all done and put this on the shelf, when do you use the general plan? Is that you don't want an application?
For every project that comes in front of us.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah.
It refers to the general plan? Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you're doing your background information on any project before us, you say, how does it align with the general plan, the land use plan, a regional plan, community service, HUAs? It all comes into play.
So every project that comes in over the counter, whether it's planning, building, public works, doesn't matter, has to be consistent with the direction of the general plan from a land use perspective and a policy perspective.
Yep.
And that's where the zoning comes in too. So this is a critical guiding document that will facilitate future development and future policy the county implements.
This is a foundation for every decision you and I make on here.
Okay, but have we ever had a applicant appeal a general plan?
Oh, yeah. Four lawsuits in my time on this commission.
For the Scott Valley plan?
No. County, I'm not going into details, but I've been involved in Commissioner Hart.
Okay.
Four lawsuits based on inconsistency, a general plan versus what we decided.
And the general plan can be amended up to four times a year through general plan amendments. So an applicant could come in and say, my property is designated X, but I'd like it designated Y, and they can file for a change like that.
But you have 9 incorporated cities in this county, correct? Right, 9 corporates. Are you doing the general plan for those as well?
No. So we're just focusing on the general plan for unincorporated areas outside the county. Okay. I mean, outside of the city boundaries.
And they are doing theirs. Simultaneously, right?
Not necessarily. So cities are on their own track. The cities do their general plan separately. I'm not sure where all of them are in that process.
I think Wairika's doing theirs now.
Yeah, they're updating theirs currently.
Yes.
Okay. We're taking a 5-minute recess.